Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, it is a Monday and we are packed. This is the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're live in Los Angeles on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. 1 hour from now, a great edition. Colin was right. Colin was wrong. We are absolutely packed. Joy Taylor is joining me. You know, Monday after Thanksgiving, we got the Cowboys to talk about on Thursday. It is a jam show today. How was your Thanksgiving?
It was great. How was yours?
Mine was out west where it was cold. Yours was out east where it was really cold.
Actually, it was nice. It wasn't too windy. And the Steelers got a win.
And the Dolphins got a win.
I had a great weekend.
It's going to be hard to tolerate Joy Taylor today. The Dolphins and the Steelers won. Let me talk about this. So this morning, oh my Lord, panic in New England. Super Bowl's over. Oh my God, it's over. Brady shot. Really? Let's see. First downs, New England had twice as many as Houston. Third down efficiency, New England was over 50%. They passed for 300 yards. They rushed for three times as many yards as the Texans and dominated time of possession. No, they just have a problem in New England. It's called Antonio Brown. If he's on the team today, they're favored to win the Super Bowl. Folks, football in America is changing. Kids are smart. I see it in California high school recruiting. The top 100 players in California next year, 30 are wide receivers, 10 are quarterbacks. Kids don't want to play running backs because they can't get a second contract. Kids want to be wide receivers because they'll sign you early for a third or a fourth contract. And New England does one thing not very well. Wide receiver. That's why they had to go get Josh Gordon and had to roll the dice on Antonio Brown. Houston does a lot of things wrong, but they got the quarterback right and the wide receiver right. I watch the Houston Texans on a weekly basis get out-coached, out-schemed, outsmarted, and outplayed. But Deshaun Watson rolls out, throws a flag football up in the air, you know, flag football play, they diagram, and one of their unbelievable wide receivers goes and catches it. Minnesota, Baltimore, San Francisco, Kansas City, Houston have done a really good job to stay ahead of the curve and pay for wide receivers and scout wide receivers and go get wide receivers. It allows you freebies. It allows you to get out coached and outplayed and win. New England does not have an ace on the pitching staff. Therefore, forcing Julian Edelman, who'd be a great number two, to be their number one. And Mohamed Sanu, who'd be a great number three, to be their number two. Ask yourself this, if you think the season's over for New England. Are they good enough at head coach to win a Super Bowl? Yes. Are they good enough on defense to win a Super Bowl? Yes. Are they good enough on special teams to win a Super Bowl? Yes. Are they good enough with their coordinators and their offensive line to win a Super Bowl? Yes. Are they good enough at running back to win the Super Bowl? Yes. Are they good enough at quarterback to win the Super Bowl? Yes, they are. They did it last year. But they're not good enough at weapons. Therefore, forcing New England to have to be perfect. No penalties, 12-play drives, because they don't get any freebies over the top. And they've done everything well in New England for 20 years. But I have been banging on them. Joy is my witness. Tui is my witness. Goulet is my witness. I've been saying this for about 5 years on New England. They don't scout receiver well. They don't draft it well. They don't develop it very well. Julian Edelman was a college quarterback. That's classic New England. We're not good at receiver. We'll find somebody who's not a receiver, make him a receiver, and Brady will make him great. It's not the end of anything. This organization does everything right, but we have a changing football world, and it's really changing on the outside, and New England doesn't do that well. And my gut feeling is they have a Hail Mary. The Hail Mary is Antonio Brown gets, if potentially cleared, they give him a second chance, and everything changes. Then you'd have to double Antonio. Edelman's a great two. Sanu's a remarkable three. And then Philip Dorsett and N'Keal Harry are terrific fours. But now everybody's got to move up, and it's just not good enough. You can out-coach. Tripled the Texans rushing. Better on third down. More first downs. Better on – more, yes, better. But Deshaun Watson flings it up a couple times. We got receivers. We figured that out, and we win the game. That's the new NFL. You better not be lousy at wide receiver. And New England now may not be lousy, but they're not very good. Still a very good football team, as Tom Brady said afterwards.
We're not 2-10. We're 10-2. There's very high expectations. And the expectations for our team often are, you know, a very, very, very high level. And I understand that. But at the same time, I think there's realistic expectations with our circumstances and incorporating different elements and players and injuries. And again, we're just trying to do the best that we can do.
I think they're still in the Super Bowl picture, but can no longer be a favorite unless the Hail Mary to Antonio Brown develops. For the record, Brady went to the owner and put up a massive fight to keep AB for a reason. He knew this would be the issue. They're good enough everywhere else, but get no freebies over the top now. Let's shift gears to Pittsburgh and Cleveland. Tip of the cap to Mike Tomlin, coach of the year. Maybe get my vote. Great organizations overcome obstacles. Steelers. Lousy organizations create obstacles. Cleveland. The NFL has always been about structure, and structure is boring. NBA is about stars. That's fun. International soccer is about stars. That's fun. Football's about structure. Owner, GM, coach, quarterback, grown-ups, high IQ, totally focused, kind of boring. The Cleveland Browns have been so chaotic for years. Their structure, so inept, so mocked, so poorly thought of in the league that Freddie Kitchens gets a head coaching job. Freddie Kitchens was a position coach. For years and years, he was known as sort of a funny, likable Southern NFL position coach. Then, because he's over his skis, he was given the big boy job in the corner table, and he puffs his chest out, and he just doesn't feel right. And so now Baker Mayfield, and I could hammer Baker all day today, but I will not. Because I've said from the beginning, Baker is not talented enough to overcome a below-average head coach or a general manager, John Dorsey, who was run out of a better organization, Kansas City. Freddie Kitchens did something, and this really sums it up. I've always said this about crimes. I understand some crimes. I understand crimes of passion. You walk in, your wife's having an affair, you take a baseball bat to a guy, crime of passion. Your kid's starving. You walk into a 7-Eleven, you grab a loaf of bread and peanut butter. Your son's crying at home, they're starving. It's a crime of desperation. Bank robbery is a special kind of dumb. You got to plan it. You got to call people. You need help. It takes weeks. Nobody in the time goes, we're robbing a bank with security cameras. Not great. This is Freddie Kitchens. I understand coaches in the moment, big game, highly leveraged, a lot of pressure, make a play call, and you and I don't like it. I'll defend coaches on that. These games go fast. The clock is running. 75,000 people. It's a playoff game. Millions on the line. I make a call on third down. I go for it, and I make a bad call. I'll defend you. But to put a T-shirt on knowing you are now mocking a violent event which embarrassed your franchise in the NFL and allow a fan to take a picture of it is a special kind of dumb. That's what a position coach does or a rookie player does. That is not what an NFL head coach does. And he addressed it after the game and doubled down on it.
I wore a T-shirt. I wore a jacket with it. My daughters wanted me to wear the shirt, and I'd wear it again. I'd put a jacket on. I covered it up. I took a picture with a fan. That was as simple as that, you know. T-shirt didn't cause us to give up 40-yard passes, and we were ready to play. That's the only thing people need to be concerned about. We were ready to play.
So you covered it up, so you knew it wasn't a great idea. When you put that T-shirt on, you covered it up. But my daughter thought it was a great idea. My son thought farting in public was funny at 6. I'm not going to do what my son thinks or my daughter thinks. I'm an adult, a head coach, a 7-figure NFL coach. And there was a violent act regardless of whose fault, the NFL was embarrassed, your owner was embarrassed, your GM was embarrassed, the league was embarrassed, and you mock it like Cleveland's done all year, looking in the rearview mirror on an event 2 weeks ago. Folks, Freddie Kitchens is what Cleveland ends up with. Pittsburgh ends up with Mike Tomlin, Bill Cowher, and Chuck Knoll. Great organizations have a job opening, and the very best at everything rushes to sign up for it. Cleveland has a job opening, and Freddie Kitchens is the best candidate. Great organizations, Pittsburgh Steelers, on a third or fourth string quarterback overcome obstacles. Lousy organizations wearing a T-shirt to a game. Lousy organizations create obstacles. Ramon Foster of the Steelers couldn't believe when he saw the coach and the T-shirt.
Did you feel it was disrespectful for a coach to be wearing something like that?
I'll leave it up to you guys, but I know our coach would have never done anything like that. Why throw gas? When you do something like that, you throw your players in harm's way.
Again, there is good news for Cleveland. The good news between the helmet incident and your coach not having the wherewithal to understand how serious it was and mock it, it gives Cleveland the ability now to fire Freddie Kitchens. GMs do not like to hire coaches and have to fire them within a year because it means the GM hired the wrong guy. And John Dorsey has got an ego. He does not want to fire Freddie Kitchens. So that loss yesterday, if Cleveland wins that game and wins the rest of the games and goes 9-7, Freddie Kitchens is hard to fire because I hired him. If I hire somebody, I don't want to fire him a year later, or I'm acknowledging I whiffed. But John Dorsey can now go out and say, between the helmet, lack of respect, between the T-shirt, you know what? I gave a young man a chance, and he just wasn't right for the job. So there is a silver lining in this annual dumpster fire. Freddie Kitchens is officially a coach, unofficially fired by the Cleveland Browns. It'll be announced fairly soon. A week, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, they'll move on.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
You know, you look at the box. I look at the box score, first thing I do with football games. Dallas gets all sorts of yards. Yards and stats are not the problem because personnel's not the problem. Dallas had more first downs, 10 more than Buffalo. They were just as good on third down, more plays, better yards per play, more passing yards, 2 for 4 in the red zone. Yards aren't the problem, and stats aren't the problem. Why? Because personnel and playmakers are not the problem for Dallas. When I was in college, I used to eat a lot of Top Ramen because it was really simple. Add hot water and stir. And I wasn't a chef, I'm still not, and it was an easy solution to my hunger. Add hot water and stir. I like problems like that. One thing to do, maybe a second easy thing. Dallas has the best problem in the NFL. Just add the right head coach and stir. Everything else is fine. Buffalo's got a great defense. Dallas had no problems moving the ball on maybe the second or third best defense in the NFL. Dallas... There are teams in this league, the New York Jets, have a bad O-line, need a new number one receiver, need a number one cornerback, need an edge rusher. The head coach and the defensive coordinator hate each other, and we're not sure if we like the owners. That's a bunch of problems. Cincinnati and Washington, I don't like the owners, I don't like the GM, I don't like the offensive lines, I don't like almost anything. Those are major problems. You need a chef in that kitchen. Dallas? You got all sorts of yards and stats and playmakers. You just got to get the right head coach. And we know three things. A, the Cowboys have the personnel. B, Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones draft very well. They're really an excellent drafting team, excellent scouting department. And C, Dallas pays. Jerry Jones does not get hand cramps. He writes big checks. And this is the kind of job where a very good coaching candidate in the NFL would look and go, man, you can walk right into that thing. I can walk right into that thing. I got players. I can win. I can win right now. And you got Lincoln Riley out there. I'll just throw out Urban Meyer. Everybody thinks Urban Meyer wants to coach college football again. I'm not sure he does. I think he'd probably take a phone call from these guys. I think Lincoln Riley would take a phone call from these guys. Most NFL jobs, you need a chef to fix. That you got to fix the O-line. You got to fix your wide receivers. You don't have any of those problems. This is add hot water and stir. Let's just get the right coach in. I mean, Buffalo just outcoached them. That game was decided by three factors. One, a very clever trick play by Buffalo. Two, Cole Beasley. You think Buffalo was going to make a point and give Cole a chance to burn his old teammates? Dallas couldn't figure that out. You think he'd put more heat on Cole Beasley. And three, some situational football. Second half in the football game, some adjustments. It's all coaching stuff. So this is a great problem to have. The Jets have multiple problems. Cincinnati's got six. The Jets have four. Washington's got nine. You need Bobby Flay. I could figure out the Cowboys. Get the right coach.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Doug Gottlieb joining us. Joy Taylor as well. Top of the hour. Colin Wright, Colin Wrong. Let's start with Freddie Kitchens. I said, when you're a chaotic organization and you have job openings, a lot of people are like, I'm not bringing my daughters and my kids cross country. My wife doesn't want to live there. Cleveland's got a chaos problem where you have a job opening and you end up with Freddie Kitchens, who would not have interviewed for a Baylor football job. I like Freddie Kitchens. I know guys that know Freddie. They said he was a funny running back coach. People liked him. And then they give him the big job and he puffs his chest out and wants to be a head coach. And it's like, he's not a head coach. So in a way, could I not argue losing allows Dorsey to now fire him and Baker can have a real coach or a semblance of one?
Oh, I don't think there's any question that he's the guy that takes the fall, right? Because John Dorsey made all these draft picks. People say they have talent. He's not going anywhere. Baker Mayfield, to this point, probably still gets another year.
Oh, sure.
With a new offensive coordinator, right, at least maybe a new head coach. And I think that's why people didn't want to take the job, not just the chaos in the organization and how it was a turnstile in terms of coaches and quarterbacks, but also Baker was so powerful this offseason that whoever came in, if it didn't go right, was going to get fired. But the idea, and look, I get it. Your kid hands you a T-shirt and says, wear it. It's funny. It's kind of clever. And, you know, it's sort of galvanizing. But this is the Peter principle. I just got back from my alma mater, Oklahoma State. I'm a graduate of the Spears School of Business.
Yeah.
And one of the things you study in business school is the Peter principle, which is when you're elevated above the level of your competency.
Sure.
And that's him, right? As a quarterback, as a running back coach,
great.
Offensive coordinator, maybe even then, because he's a former quarterback at Alabama, sees a little differently. Like, okay. But when you skip steps,
yes.
And then let's never forget, not only did he take on the head coaching job, but he's also calling the plays. So he's performing a task that he's not really prepared for.
Yeah.
And then calling plays. And if you look around the league, a lot of these, you know, Kellen Moore with the Cowboys, some of his play calling. It's the first time doing it. It's learning on the job. Even when you've been an NFL quarterback,
can you imagine Kellen Moore being a head coach?
No. Of the Cowboys, no.
No, he just couldn't do it. Yes. So, and by
it's a big, big, big job. There's a lot of fires. And then you have the OBJ stuff and the Baker stuff and the Myles Garrett stuff. And this is the stuff you handle when you're a head coach, not an offense coordinator.
Jimmy Johnson, the former Cowboy coach, told me this weekend, he goes, the best coaches in this league are walk-around coaches, where you kind of walk around and you say, don't do that, do that. He goes, Sean Payton is one of the only guys that literally calls plays, he's on one side of the football, and they win. And he said, but most of the great coaches, he goes, you know, Pete Carroll, Belichick, kind of walk around, fix that. And he goes, Freddie Kitchens, right now, forget walk around. He's just walking into the offensive room, glaring at it, and not being able to run the team, to your point, little over his skis, making it up as he goes.
And then, of course, on the other side, you have Mike Tomlin, who you and I have discussed. You know, there's a reason he's never had a losing season.
Ever.
And the reports out of the locker room was he picked up the marker and made some adjustments at the half and said, we're going to do this, this, and this. And with a guy who's a four-string quarterback in camp, ends up, you know, beating the Cleveland Browns without his running back, without his center. I mean,
it's a great.
It's a remarkable story. And yes, that's organizational. And a lot of people question, you know, what did Mike Tomlin do? He's a walk around sort of guy. But when push comes to shove, in a moment where you try and find out, does this guy actually know what he's talking about? He does. Whereas Freddie Kitchens can't control that thing. You know, I mean, look, is it his fault that OBJ went out? No. Is it his fault some of the other issues they're playing without Myles Garrett? Yes and no, but most penalized team in the league,
yeah.
And they're underachieving even now with a schedule that should be manageable. Yeah. We all knew the first start of the schedule was easy, but you predicted it would turn around. Think of the games in which they've lost, the Broncos game they shouldn't have lost, and how they looked in the second half speaks to coaching.
Okay, New England, and my argument is pitching staffs need an ace. Rich Hill for the Dodgers is a great four, an okay three. He's a bad two. Is that if you had Antonio Brown in New England, then Edelman's a great two and Mohamed Sanu's a terrific three. But you don't have that now. So everybody moves up.
Yeah.
And it's a pop gun offense. But I do think all the other elements of this team are good enough to win a Super Bowl, but they can't in 2019 with zero tight end and zero deep threat.
So your proposal is you go and re-sign Antonio Brown if he's cleared by the league?
If he's cleared, Tom Brady fought for him. I mean, let's be honest about this league. We make a lot of decisions based on do you have the talent.
I get it, and it does make sense. You have to have somebody where the safety has to double over the top.
Yes.
Otherwise, no one's going to get open.
Right.
And last year, they had the ability to run the football, which they don't have nearly as much. One reason is Gronk, who, as well respected as Gronk is as a pass catcher, didn't get the respect he deserved as a guy who could block.
Yeah.
Like all these other great pass, great George Kittle, like not really a blocker, unbelievable talent, not a blocker, right? You kind of go around the league at all these great pass-catching tight ends. Most of them aren't blockers. Gronk was, so he could hit you in both.
Yeah.
And then they would hit you with, if they had the mismatch on Gronk or if they only put one guy on Edelman, you know, those two could beat you. And they survived in the playoffs and survived in the Super Bowl. I am going to fall for the banana in the tailpipe, right? Like, everybody, I'm falling for it. I do think they don't look like they have the offense.
I agree.
Now, keep in mind, they'd have to beat the Chiefs, who we'll see them against this week. They'd have to beat the Ravens, who we saw them against. But the second time around, you would think they'd be able to make Lamar Jackson more of a thrower, and the weather in Baltimore or New England couldn't be particularly good. And yes, they won this week, but it wasn't like Lamar's offense was the reason that they won.
Right.
That was a team win in Baltimore. So do I think they're completely washed up? No, but I think they have major offensive problems. But let's not forget, when Antonio Brown was there, every day there was a new story. Okay, it's not just one thing. And it wasn't just that he, you know, sent DMs about, you know, this one woman or this one massage therapist or this one, you know, trainer who trained him. It was every single day there was something. The day he signed there,
yes,
there was a story that came out. And the Patriots had to be ticked because they were probably asking, is there anything that's going to come out? And he said, nah, nothing I know about. And, of course, lawsuit, story, direct message. It was just too much. And now I don't think the tweeting about wanting to play for the Patriots does him any good.
I don't either.
So you're right. But when you consider what the owner went through in the offseason, I think that's a major factor as to whether the league wants that to happen. I don't think they have the weaponry this year, and I don't think that you can score enough with Kansas City, and I'm not convinced that they can score enough with Baltimore to get to another Super Bowl.
Let's talk college football. We got about 3 minutes. I want to give you the floor. Jim Harbaugh's got 9 wins. If they win a bowl, it'll be 10. That would be the fourth year out of 5 he's won 10 games. Are we judging him because he can't beat a superior football program in Ohio State? Are we judging him just on that when the reality is he's going to win 10 games again this year?
It's a little bit of both, right? Ohio State's fired a coach because he couldn't beat Michigan, right? That has happened. But we have to remember that unlike Ohio State, they share the state with Michigan State, and they've essentially eviscerated that program during his time there. That's what's changed, is they once again became big brother in the state.
Yeah, Michigan State can no longer recruit. Jim gets all the good players.
Right, and there's fewer players in Michigan. There's more in Ohio, and you're fighting Michigan State and Ohio State for the players in Michigan, as well as now going to Florida and going to Texas. I don't think people understand, have a healthy respect for what he inherited. There was infighting. There was, you know, a couple of athletic director changes. They had to modernize the strength and conditioning program, and he's made them a consistent winner. Does he have to beat Ohio State? Yes. Yes, he absolutely does. And this was supposed to be the year, and turns out Ohio State might be better than they've ever been. But, like, Michigan fans, because they've won more games than anybody in the history of football, think they invented football. You've won one national championship in the history, in the modern era of football. One. One. And by the way, didn't they split that year? Right?
Yeah. Was that the Charles Woodson year?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They split that year. I was in college. That's how long ago it was. Right? So, with respect to Michigan fans who think you're Michigan, you're supposed to, should you beat Ohio State? Yes. Mack Brown couldn't beat Bob Stoops the first 4 or 5 years that Bob Stoops was
Because Oklahoma's a better program than Texas.
Yeah, yes, and eventually I do think that Michigan fixes this thing. And I would have thought Shea Patterson's last year it would happen. But the idea of selling Harbaugh because he can't beat arguably the best football program in the country, it, to me, is laughable considering where you were and how the program's trajectory continues.
By the way, Cowboys are going to have a job opening, it does appear. Harbaugh probably, Michigan wants to fire Harbaugh. He may get a call from Jerry. Is there a magic elixir, or say I'll use that again, for the Cowboys?
No, because remember, could they find the coach? Yes. But you're Lincoln Riley. Do you want your owner having press conferences in the locker room when, you're king at Oklahoma? Remember, college football coaches are making $6, $7, $8 million now.
Yes, they are.
And they have better players than the other team 90% of the time.
At Oklahoma, yes.
Yes, 90% of the time. You know, there's like Texas and whoever they play out of conference and the college football playoff. That's it. Other than that, you got better players than everybody else. Why would you go to the Cowboys? The perfect idea of what is wrong with the Cowboys is Cole Beasley should have been on the Cowboys. Instead, he gets $29 million, 4 years to walk, and he is one of the big reasons the Bills beat him. Yes, they have the glamour players, but it's those gritty players. It's those guys that make plays on third down. Their special teams is a disaster. Their defense doesn't get a big stop. Their offense lacks a Cole Beasley. I think they're all glitz and glamour, but I think the idea of going out and hiring a Urban Meyer, does he want?
It's a fair.
Jimmy Johnson couldn't do it, and Bill Parcells couldn't do it.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Every Monday, I have big, strong opinions. I call myself out, though. A lot of times I whiff, and I need to be held accountable where Colin was right, where Colin was wrong.
Where Colin was right?
We have said since training camp and since the draft, the Patriots, why don't you draft a tight end? Now they don't have one. Why did you let Josh Gordon go? He's good enough to make an occasional over-the-top play. Use him as a decoy. Belichick has left Tom Brady with a pitching staff with no ace. It's a pop-gun offense. All the components of a Super Bowl team are here. But we said this during the draft. Use those picks. Go up and get a tight end. They're the worst tight end offense right now in the NFL. They've lived on it. They've dined on it for a decade. They didn't address it, so they can't attack the middle of the field. All of their problems you could see before the draft. You could see them last year. You could see them coming. Why they let Josh Gordon go, I'll never know. Seattle immediately picked him up, and he's immediately paid dividends. This was all very predictable with their offense.
Where Colin was wrong.
Blazing Five stunk, 1-4. Raiders imploded. Kyler Murray, worst game as a pro. On the year, I'm at 51%. For the record, I've never, ever had a losing record in Blazing Five. So the pressure is on me this week. I've always been in the 55-56% region. So the pressure is overwhelmingly on me, and I stunk this weekend, did not get it done.
Where Colin was right?
We said when John Dorsey hired Freddie Kitchens, we said he's hiring somebody he can control. He's got a big ego, and this is what happened. Freddie Kitchens doesn't have the gravitas, doesn't have the maturity, doesn't have the experience. This was an incredibly, and then they acquired OBJ, who's mostly been fine this year, but this was really predictable, is that a general manager, there's an old saying in business, A's hire A's and B's hire C's. John Dorsey got run out of Kansas City and wanted to control his head coach, and instead he gets a head coach that's really at best a coordinator, at best a coordinator.
Where Colin was wrong.
Mike Tomlin, coach of the year, would certainly be a legitimate vote. Devlin Hodges, by the way, the 2018 Alabama duck calling champion. I'm not joking. He was the world's best duck caller at 13 years old. He's called Duck Hodges. Fourth string quarterback in camp, yet they win. They're on a third-string running back, Benny Snell. Juju Smith-Schuster doesn't play. Marquise Pouncey, their center, doesn't play. They're an injury-riddled mess on a fourth-string quarterback, and I've been highly critical of Tomlin through the years, being too emotional and not detail-oriented. But they are in the wild card race. I mean, we give Sean Payton credit because he won with a backup. This is a fourth-stringer in camp in a division with Baltimore. And the talented Browns, Mike Tomlin, this is as good a job as he has ever done. Never had a losing season. Got my respect. Man, he's been great.
Where Colin was right.
We said this when they were winless. We said the Miami Dolphins are a well-coached, lousy team. And people don't think that's possible. It is. This team was down two touchdowns late, came back and won. That doesn't happen for a team that's almost tanking. Miami's got a couple of nice wide receivers, but this is a team that gets every ounce out of their talent. Brian Flores there had the best trick play I've seen all year. They have three first-rounders, and we said this. There's a difference between being Cincinnati bad and Miami bad. Miami's got the right coach and a direction and a plan, and them coming back to win that game just proves a point that we tried to make. You can be bad and very well coached, just have personnel limitations, and I think they'll solve most of those limitations next year in the draft and free agency.
Where Colin was wrong.
I jumped on the Raiders too fast. A couple of weeks ago, I had the Raiders, I think, above Kansas City at number 9 in the herd hierarchy, and the staff said, don't do that. You're going to regret it. Don't do that. Since then, they have been outscored 74-12. And their defense is bad. They need more weapons. And they're a year away. They do have some offensive talent I like. And I love their running backs, but it's hard to feed the running backs when you're down by 28. Running backs become really irrelevant when you're down by 4 touchdowns. Derek Carr did not look comfortable yesterday. And listen, it's one of those things where I was so wrong on the Raiders that I overextended my opinion on the Raiders. And right now they're a developing franchise. I mean, they're still in the wild card race. But Buffalo's a wild card team. The Raiders think they are. But if you look at Buffalo and you look at Oakland, wild card teams should be good enough to win a game. Oakland's not good enough to win a playoff game. And I was on them too quick.
Where Colin was right.
The Brooklyn Nets are now 6-3 without Kyrie Irving and 4-8 with him. By the way, the Celtics this year are better significantly without him. The Celtics last year were 12-3 in games without Kyrie. He's a problem. He's always hurt. He's selfish. He's not a great teammate. A lot of diva. And at times, the earth is flat. He's a little odd. This week, he went on a rambling Instagram rant about how people boo him, and I'm more than just a player. And of course you are. I'm more than just a sportscaster, but people tune in to hear my sports opinions, and people pay tickets to watch you be a basketball player. We all know we're more than just what we do for a living. I'll say it again. Kevin Durant bailed on Steph Curry for Kyrie Irving. I've been watching the NBA for 40 years. You'll get a guy in the league. This happens all the time. There's always a couple guys in the league. They're great individual players. They're not good teammates. That's okay. I mean, you ever go to the YMCA and you watch a guy and you're like, oh my God, he's great. Nobody can stand him. Kyrie's difficult. He does not make teams better. LeBron made him. He bailed on LeBron, and that's what you got.
Where Colin was wrong.
I predicted Bama and Clemson would play for a national title, and that's not going to happen. Bama can't stop anybody. They couldn't stop Auburn and their freshman quarterback. They couldn't stop LSU. Last three times they faced Clemson, they can't stop them. I still think it's a great program, but they've lost too many great assistants. They've lost too many players early. This is what happened to Pete Carroll at USC, Mack Brown at Texas. Alabama doesn't scare anybody. Next year's offense is not going to be nearly as dynamic at running back, quarterback, or wide receiver. You just can't keep losing great assistants like Kirby Smart, who then goes to a rival and starts out-recruiting you. They're not as good. They don't have as many good players. They'll still win 10 games next year, but they're not a national champ. They played two good teams this year. They lost to both and couldn't stop either. That's who they are. I was wrong.
Where Colin was right.
Nick Foles got benched. Of course he did. He's Nick Foles. Listen, he hit lightning in a bottle on an unbelievable Philadelphia roster for a year and a half. But now, he's a four-year, $88 million backup, and that is the worst quarterback contract. You think Kirk Cousins' contract's a problem? This morning, it looks like a deal. This is a bad quarterback contract. First three drives, he had turnovers. He's never been overly athletic. He's got a good arm, not great. He's a backup who hit lightning in a bottle. By the way, Tim Tebow won seven straight games. Mark Sanchez got to an AFC championship a couple times. He's not an elite quarterback. He's not a $20 million quarterback. He's a good kid who was going to retire a couple of years ago until he hit it in Philadelphia with great offensive coaches. And now he's back to being, you know, Nick Foles.
Where Colin was wrong.
I predicted Gus Malzahn would be fired probably mid-season at Auburn, and he just beat Nick Saban for the third time in his career. Gus Malzahn has been, especially at home, a big pain in the butt for Nick. He outsmarted him on that final play of the game when he put a punter in and Nick was trying to rush people in. He's clever offensively. They recruit the heck out of the state and the region. They got a ton of NFL guys. And listen, it's not easy when Alabama and Nick Saban are in your state. So they're not as good as Alabama, but I didn't think he could withstand this year. They beat the Oregon Ducks early. I thought that would be a problem. They beat Alabama. They may have had the toughest schedule. They beat Texas A&M. I was wrong. I thought he was going to get rolled. I predicted it. And I missed on that one.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
We watched the Cowboys lose, and the way they lost, it's the second straight weekend, first with Belichick, then Sean McDermott, where as an observer, even a casual observer, it did feel like Jason Garrett got a little out-coached, out-detailed. And we're going to bring in somebody we absolutely love. She's a reporter for the NFL Network. She's been living in Dallas for years and covering the Cowboys via the Coward Global Satellite Network. Jane Slater, at Slater NFL. All right, let's start with this. Jerry started this, Jane, about a month ago. He started bringing up Belichick and bringing up coaches. Does Jason Garrett have anyone in his corner today that's fighting for him, Jane?
His team, and I think that's the most important group of men that he needs there at the Star in Frisco. We've been talking about this since after the Packers loss and again after the Rams loss. I was told that Jerry was beside himself and infuriated. That's when essentially it came out that Jason was not going to get that extension. He was getting the 1 year to play this one out. And I think Jerry is frustrated. I think that I would not be surprised if, you know, they've got a list of guys they're interested in bringing in here next year, given the expectations for this team and them not meeting those expectations. You know, you and I have talked about this. They haven't had significant injuries to their starters. In other words, they haven't lost their quarterback, a running back, or a player that you could point to like Ron Rivera, who doesn't have Cam Newton, say, this is why our record looks like this. And then they've gone and they've played teams where they've caught breaks, the Minnesota Vikings, Green Bay, Detroit. And he's just, if you want to put a finger and assign blame somewhere, you have to look at coaching this year. So, you know, I've joked in the past, you and I talked about this summer, that I didn't think that he was on the hot seat. I've always thought that that seat was lukewarm. It's definitely hot this year, but I think the most important thing for Jason Garrett is you got Jerry once again in his corner talking about it after the game. We were all sort of incredulous about that on Thanksgiving. But more importantly, he's got the team. The team has never said that they don't buy into him, that they don't believe in him. Yet still, when his back was against the wall, he was coaching for a job on Thanksgiving. The team did not show up in that game when they played the Buffalo Bills. So it's going to be interesting to keep an eye on this, Colin. It's kind of a long-winded answer for you, but he does have the support of this football team still.
I would say this. Jerry had, if not perplexing, an interesting reaction to it. He was very emotional, and we thought, I remember watching Jerry walk down the hallway after the game and thought, oh, he's ticked off. And yet he got very emotional. You were there with Jerry. He was almost fully supportive. Were you surprised by Jerry post-game after the Buffalo loss?
Absolutely. All of us were, quite frankly. We stood, I was right in front of Jerry when he came out of the locker room and talked to us for roughly 28 minutes. And we asked him every single way possible. You know, you essentially threw your coach under the bus this whole week. You didn't walk off your comments after the Patriots loss. You went on radio on Tuesday and then Good Morning Football and NFL Network on Wednesday. And you made it very clear you wanted to, quote, win some damn football games. Well, they didn't win a damn football game. And then he went on to say with tears in his eyes that he believes in the group of men in that locker room. And I reminded him that that team needed to play for their coach and they didn't. And he continued to say that, you know, this is a team he believes can go ahead and win out the rest of the month and then make a run in the playoffs. And then I reminded him again, well, you guys are 0-5 against winning teams. Where's that? Where's the confidence coming from? I truly believe this, Colin. You know, he talks very endearingly about his time as an Arkansas football player. And I feel like he was in the locker room. He felt the emotions of that locker room. And if he could have put on a helmet and run through a wall with them, he would have. But I think he got caught up in the moment. And I think he felt like he was a part of this team. And the best way to support that team was to support their coach very publicly. And he did that.
You're hearing discussions now. We kind of joke that the franchise tag is like the engagement ring of the NFL. I love you, sort of. You know, I don't want you to leave me. Kirk Cousins, by the way, had a 9-7 year, Jane. He got to the playoffs. He was statistically very impressive. And Washington said, no, we need to see more of this. I'm hearing people that I trust say Dak could be in for a franchise tag. A, do you believe that? And B, how would that land in the Cowboy locker room, in your opinion?
Well, right before I came on air, I reached out to one of my sources and asked him just that. And I was told it is looking like it's going in the direction of a franchise tag, wow, which I think is fascinating. You know, we were talking about this a few months ago. Dak's team came to the Cowboys and said they wanted $40 million. Dak's agent went on record and said that they disagreed with that report, that that was false. You know, you and I had talked about it was a way to get them somewhere to the $33, $35 million range. And Jerry has repeatedly said, while he praises Dak Prescott, he knows he's an important part of this football team. They've got a lot of other guys that they've got to consider, and they can't break up the roster to pay one guy. Now, I think he's, in Jerry's mind, he's thinking, well, with this, you know, the CBA, and of course, they're going to have more room with money here in another year, that maybe they can pay Dak what he feels that he deserves. But I'm getting the sense, and I was literally told via text, that it's looking like it's going in the franchise tag direction.
Wow.
And I don't think it's a disrespect towards Dak. They want Dak, but Dak doesn't want to give him a hometown discount either. And I don't, while I think that it would be frustrating for Dak, he feels like, you know, think of everything he's done the last 4 years in Dallas. I mean, he's done everything you could possibly ask him to do. And, you know, there's a reason that he was in part of the MVP conversation. Look what he's been able to win in spite of here in Dallas this season. He's the type of guy that I will say, I don't think he's going to look at it from a disrespect standpoint. I don't think it's going to create problems in the locker room. He's just one of those guys that seems to be able to focus on the task at hand, and that's just be the best quarterback he can be for the football team. But yeah, I'm a little shocked that the conversations have headed in that direction.
NFL Network's Jane Slater. One more question. If there is a replacement for Jerry, Lincoln Riley is the obvious North Star. He's really the guy they want. But Oklahoma's a terrific college job. He's a young coach. He certainly could stay there for another 7-8 years and then become a coach. I work with a guy named Urban Meyer. I mean, Urban Meyer's the best candidate in the world, not coaching right now. Is there, would it be an NFL move, a college move? About a minute left, Jane. What do you hear? Because, I mean, this is all over Dallas papers and Dallas radio. Besides Lincoln Riley, is there anybody else Cowboy fans want?
The Cowboys and the fans wanted Sean Payton, and then Sean Payton went and got himself an extension in New Orleans. So I think it is, it's a tricky situation for him. And I think honestly, that's why they've held on to Jason, is, you know, we've kind of talked about this before. He's the devil that they know. I would honestly, Colin, not be surprised that if this team did win out the rest of the season and got themselves in the playoffs, that we're talking Jason Garrett again next year.
Wow.
That's how Dallas operates. But Lincoln, obviously the coach that's the hot idea right now because of the way they courted Jerry's grandson when he was going off to college. And as much as I don't love the idea of bringing in a college guy and expecting him to make an immediate impact here in Dallas, you know, they did do it with a guy like Jimmy Johnson and Barry Switzer.
Yep.
So yeah. Who knows?